Welcome to Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations. I'm your host, Tim Friedman, along with rock expert, fellow Clevelander, Frank Host. Frankie, how are you?
I'm good, and it's great to be here.
One of your favorites, Jake Isles, a featured artist from Boston. You know, they had a big following in Detroit. A couple of their live albums were recorded there.
Exactly.
And so they were also big in Boston, of course, and Cleveland, weren't they?
Sure. I think they were as big here as they were anywhere.
We'll be talking about them before too long. Starting as usual with Today in Rock History, 1967, just days after completing Sgt. Pepper's, the Beatles began laying down some tracks for Magical Mystery Tour, which you said, you know, a lot of people kind of forgot or not dismissed, but didn't know it was there, even though it didn't hit number one in 1968.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
It's one of your favorites, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a good album. It's a little bit of almost a greatest hits album in a lot of respects, because they threw on a lot of singles that hadn't been on records before.
Wasn't like All You Need Is Love on there?
Exactly.
Yeah. That kind of thing. Carole King's soon-to-be hit single, It's Too Late, was released on this date, April 25th, 1971. And of course, the flip side, I Feel the Earth Move Under My Feet, that was also a big hit for her.
Yeah, huge.
Pam Morrison, the widow of the late Jim Morrison, was found dead of a heroin overdose 3 years later. She was also 27 at the time of her death, just like Jim was, and you've mentioned how many other artists.
Mm-hmm.
Paul McCartney was supposed to die, right? 28 if?
Yes, exactly.
So he would have been 27 at the time of his death, too. But Pam Morrison was pronounced dead of that heroin overdose, which was not uncommon back then, was it?
Definitely.
While performing a show in 1974, you'll appreciate this, the Beach Boys were victims of a streak.
What a great time it was. Yes, streaking in 1974 are synonymous.
Didn't they streak at your graduation?
They certainly did, yeah. I kind of missed it. I heard the shriek, and I saw people running, and the next thing I knew, somebody told me, oh, they streaked.
Call me the streak.
Exactly.
Look at that. I had a friend, didn't we have a friend, no names, on our street who was once streaking and broke his ankle, fell off a curb while he was running, and that's
terrible.
That's a painful occurrence there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the streak was performed by their road crew. 1977, Elvis Presley made the last recordings of his life at a concert in Saginaw, Michigan.
Okay.
Three of the songs were used on the album Moody Blue, which was released following his death in August of that year. So
he didn't have
long to live, did he? Jimi Hendrix's Fender Stratocaster was used, you know, the one he used to perform Star Spangled Banner at Woodstock, was auctioned off in London on this date in 1990 for $295,000.
Wow, that's a expensive guitar.
I don't know how that translated to pounds, but that's a lot of money back then, even.
That's a lot of money. Yeah.
Now, too. 1994, the Eagles played their first of four concerts on their Hell Freezes Over tour at the Shoreline Amphitheater in Mountain View, California. That was before Silicon Valley. You know, that's where Apple is. My son works out at Google, Mountain View. And back then, it was probably just prairie land.
Exactly.
Or some kind of amphitheater that's now probably Google.
Exactly.
Now, in 2003, sad day, Frankie, Sinead O'Connor announced her retirement.
Oh, well, I miss her.
If you ask me, probably 13, 14 years too late. Bobby Boris Pickett, Monster Mash fame, died of leukemia at age 69 in the state in 2007. Birthdays. I wish I knew how to pronounce his first name, give him proper credit. Marconi, the Italian inventor, had much to do with the radio waves and radio, so if it weren't for him, I wouldn't have had a radio career.
That's right.
He was born in this date in 1874. He did not go to school as a child for any formal learning. He was instead taught by private tutors, thanks to his mom and dad, where he learned chemistry, mathematics, and physics.
Wow. No wonder he was so smart.
Edward R. Murrow, 1908. Ever see the movie Good Night and Good Luck? It's produced by George Clooney, who actually also appears in that movie. It's black and white.
Yes, I did, yes.
It's a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Ella Fitzgerald was born on this date in 1918. And the Globetrotters, Meadowlark Lemon, 1932.
Wow.
Ever see the Globetrotters? I've seen it a couple of times.
Absolutely, and I did see him live, so yeah.
Did they win?
Of course.
Al Pacino was born on this date in 1940. Talia Shire, you know, Rocky fame and The Godfather. I was born in this date in 1946. And by the way, in our best instrumental segment, just a couple minutes, I'll be mentioning a song by her ex-husband, David Shire.
Oh, okay.
As they were married back in the 70s.
I didn't realize that.
Frankie, we have some good concerts coming up, don't we? Now that we're just about in May, Journey and Toto Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse will be rocking the place Saturday, May 7th. Mark Cohn, the Grammy winner for Best New Artist in 1992, Kent Stage, that's Saturday the 14th. Joe Jackson, same night, MGM, Center Stage. Al Stewart on Wednesday, May 18th. Kent Stage, Blossom has Tears for Fears on May the 31st. That rounds out a really good month of concerts here coming up next month. Time for Download Discovery, Frankie. This is a fun category, isn't it?
It is.
I've got a good great one for stuff. You, and so do you. You have one from a guy named...
Kevin Ayers and The Stranger in Blue Suede Shoes. Now, Kevin was a founding member of the band The Soft Machine.
I know them, yeah.
A group that was one of the first British psychedelic acts and later moved into progressive rock and jazz fusion. While critically acclaimed, they sold very few records, so Kevin went on his own, hoping to hit it big. Well, that never happened either, but we did get this great tune off his third solo album from 1971, Whatever She Brings We Sing. Now, that's all pushed together in one big name.
Wow.
It's a story of what must be a long-haired hippie type with blue suede shoes who walks into a bar and is refused service to keep up with appearances. Instead of complaining, he offers the man a cigarette, which... we soon find out is actually marijuana. The man lights up, gets high, and by the end of the song is ready to literally give away the store. It's a great tune and totally true to the era. By the way, guitar and bass on the record are played by an 18-year-old Mike Oldfield.
You mentioned long hair and blue suede shoe, you know, was released at the same time as Signs was by the five-man electrical band.
That's right.
August 71, right in there. So it was re-released in 1976 when Kevin Ayers signed with Harvest Records.
Okay.
It still didn't do very well, though.
Still didn't do much.
He still managed to release a couple of singles and over a dozen albums in his career.
I'll be darned, yeah. I don't know who he was making them for, but obviously... you never heard much from him other than this song that's kind of a deep cut that gets played every once in a while.
Nowadays, they would just release it on YouTube or for a free download or something.
Sure,
the music
absolutely.
Is still getting out there, just not the way it was back then.
Right.
So I have The Smiths, and lately I've been getting into The Smiths. One of the members, Morrissey, you might remember, More You Ignore
absolutely.
Me. So The Smiths were together from like 1982 to 86. This is from their 86 album, their third, called The Queen Is Dead, and the song is called Big Mouth Strikes Again.
Nice.
It's a really cool tune written by bandmates Johnny Marr and Morrissey, whose given name is the same as my son's, Stephen Patrick.
Oh.
It was discussed his frustration, not my son's, but Morrissey's, with the music industry at the time. And inspired by the Stones hit Jumpin' Jack Flash, or even Heart's Crazy on You. It kind of sounds like that when it first begins.
Yeah,
great tune. Smiths were active for another year or so then. Morrissey wanted to do his own thing. But like I said, I've been getting into that music lately, and the English Beat and some other stuff, that Echo and the Bunny Men.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Since we started Download Discovery, I started kind of getting into the new wave again, and I've really enjoyed it.
Bludgeoned in
Best Instrumentals, Frankie, I'll begin.
Okay, great.
We talked about Talia Shire and how she has a birthday today. Well, she was married for 10 years to David Shire, who put together music from the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, not just the Bee Gees, but actually David had some instrumentals in there, like Manhattan Skyline, and he also had Salsation. So, you know, whenever I am watching Cinemax or HBO and just happen to stumble on Saturday Night Fever, the movie, I always stop and watch. That move, that music, and the dancing is outstanding.
Yeah, and it's different. It's not like anything you would see nowadays.
You know, David Shire also produced soundtracks, wrote some of the for the films like All the President's Men and Norma Rae. And then for Saturday Night Fever, he received 2 Academy Award nominations for his work.
Wow.
You know, the song doesn't go on and on forever. It's less than 5 minutes long, but it's an outstanding song, and I guess pretty much everybody still has, I know I do, their hands on a Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, whether on CD or album. Like, I have both.
Mm-hmm.
And I still watch the movie, but the music is outstanding, and so you don't have to worry about downloading it. All you have to do is look into your collection, and you can play it anytime you want.
Exactly.
What you got for me?
From not too far before that, there was a song called Pick Up the Pieces by Average White Band.
Mm-hmm.
This is just before the dawn of disco. The guitar line from the song came from Hamish Stewart, while Roger Ball wrote the first part of the horn melody. But it was a true group effort, and in the end, everyone had a credit in the writing. The song was produced by Arif Mardin, who strongly disagreed with releasing it as a single. According to legend, he said the song is a funk instrumental played by Scotsmen with no lyrics other than a shout. Not a chance it would be a hit. But tenor saxophone player Malcolm Duncan said about the shouts of Pick Up the Pieces, "It's about picking yourself up when things aren't going well. We'd spent a lot of time making no money whatsoever, so we thought it was relevant." So they took a chance, and it became a million seller, knocking out Linda Ronstadt's You're No Good from the number one spot.
That's right. Spent some time at number one in early 75. And the number two song that week, when it was number one, was Best of My Love by the Eagles, which itself would be number one the following week.
That's right.
So this band from Scotland, they were formed in London only in 1972, so they weren't struggling together for years and years and years. You know, they'd start putting some music together. A couple of the members, I guess, one's part of Brian Auger's Oblivion Express, which you've mentioned a time
or two on the show. Exactly. And tremendous players. I mean, I saw them a couple of times in concert, and they're very good instrumentalists. And so it's hardly a surprise that they had a great instrumental.
So Spotlight Year, 1968, you know, we're kind of going, not one by one, not in chronological order by any means, but 1968, we're kind of wrapping up our Spotlight Year.
That's right.
And this is 1968, quite an interesting year, not only tumultuous with whatever everything was going on, which we've talked about before, the assassinations, the conventions, and surprise hit songs like Paul Moriat, or in France they call him Paul Moriat. Love is Blue spent a lot of time at number one, didn't it?
Sure did, yeah.
Bobby Goldsboro and Honey, Hugh Masekela's Raisin in the Grass, redone by Friends of Distinction.
And you still hear that on commercials to this very day. I just saw it yesterday in a commercial.
Yeah, a commercial for an insurance company.
Exactly.
Herb Alpert took a stab at singing This Guy's in Love with You. That was number one.
Another huge album that year.
One of our former one-hit wonders, Jeannie C. Riley, Harper Valley PTA.
Boy, I remember when that came out. Boy, it was all over the radio.
Yes,
you couldn't get away from it.
Cliff Nobles and the Horse. Love that song.
Yep.
Friend and Lover, Reach Out of the Darkness. Classical Gas, Mason Williams.
Oh, another great instrumental.
Richard Harris with his 7-minute-plus song, MacArthur Park. And Dionne Warwick, Valley of the Dolls. Just some of the surprise hits that year. Remember John Fred and his Playboy band, Judy in Disguise?
Right.
With glasses.
Takeoff on Lucy in the Sky, obviously. Yeah.
And some silly songs, too, like 1-2-3 Red Light, 1910 Fruit Gum Company, Simon Says, you had Spooky from the Classics 4,
right.
Ohio Express, and Yummy, Yummy, Yummy. I got love in my tummy.
Absolutely.
Got some good albums for me, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, 68, like you say, was a year of some great albums. Number five, Big Brother and the Holding Company, Cheap Thrills. Now, Big Brother was actually an established band in San Francisco before they met up with a singer from Texas by the name of Janis Joplin. And to hear them tell it, they were awesome, and she was just another singer. Number four, Blooming Hits by Paul Moriat and his orchestra.
Yeah, that's got to be on there.
Closer to Mantovani than pop music, it was an album full of instrumentals, and the huge hit was Love is Blue. I couldn't tell you another song on there.
No, I don't think I'd want to.
Exactly.
I think one is enough.
Number three, Bookends by Simon and Garfunkel.
No, that's a good album.
Bookends was a concept album that explored a life journey from childhood to old age. Faking It, A Hazy Shade of Winter, At the Zoo, and my favorite of theirs, The Gorgeous America, are all here.
Oh, I love America.
Number two, Inagata Da Vida, Iron Butterfly. It sold more than 8 million copies within its first year of release. And here's my favorite statistic. It outsold every record in the history of recorded music to that time.
That's incredible.
At last count, it had achieved worldwide sales of over 30 million copies.
No way. The album. Do you know any songs other than Inagata?
I don't think anybody knows any songs other than, and I think you just get it because it's half the album is Inagata.
A bunch of people have it, maybe still,
absolutely.
To this day.
Number one, The Graduate soundtrack by Simon and Garfunkel. They were artists that you and your parents could enjoy. So when they sang the famous line, "Where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? Our nation turns its lonely eyes to you," they had two generations wandering along.
To help yourself. Look around you, all you
Now, there was a documentary that aired before Mike Nichols, the director of the movie, passed away. And he talked about how he wanted Simon and Garfunkel to create something for The Graduate. And first song he didn't really like, so he kind of turned it down. But he said, what else you got? And Paul said, well, I have this song. It's just like do-do-do-do-do-do. You know, it's not finished. Well, play it for me. Play a couple of bars. Oh, I love it. Keep it. But it's not finished. Ah, it doesn't matter. You'll figure something out.
Absolutely.
And he did. And the whole soundtrack went to number one, didn't it?
It did. And it was, you know, number one for the whole year. Jeez. Incredible.
Want some psychedelic hits? We've been kind of strolling down psychedelic versus pop. You know,
sure.
We're going to have another segment in a minute. Green Tambourine, Lemon Pipers, recorded right here in Cleveland. Nobody But Me, The Human Beings.
Ooh.
Pictures of Matchstick Men. One of my favorites was Vanilla Fudge's You Keep Me Hanging On.
Oh, incredible record.
Talked about Just Dropped In to See What Condition, you know, first edition.
Yes, we did.
Sunshine of Your Love, Hurdy Gurdy Man, which I love, by Donovan, and The Amboy Duke's Journey to the Center of the Mind. So you were saying whenever they need to call up a early Ted Nugent, that's the song
that's
the go-to,
song
isn't
they go
it?
To, and boy, just listening to those titles, you knew that they were psychedelic tunes, didn't you? The Human Beings.
So psychedelic versus pop, I really like this category. Once in a while, Frankie will have rock versus pop.
Right.
And we'll do that more and more as we head into the 70s, because there's plenty of great examples on the Billboard Hot 100. And stuff that maybe G98 would have played, or WLYT in the early to mid-70s, certainly Wixie,
sure.
Until they changed format in like 76 or something like that. But the week of April 12th, 1969, was a really cool psychedelic song at number 14 on the Hot 100, and it was...
Hot Smoke and Sassafras by none other than Bubble Puppy.
One of the best names of all time.
Absolutely.
One-hit wonder.
Now, for me, this was kind of a tweener song. Now, what does that mean? Well, it was kind of in between the pure pop of the early Beatles, the Association, the Monkees, that I loved, and then the harder rock of the Who and Zeppelin and the later Stones that I was kind of moving towards. A little pop, a little psychedelia, and some crunching metal chords, all played at a mind-numbing 166 beats per minute. And although they would never hit the charts again, the band is still together behind original lead vocalist and guitarist Rod Prince.
That's amazing. And in the spring of 69, Bubble Puppy had Sassafras. You know, it had two S's at the end,
yes.
But Bubble had three B's and Puppy had three P's. So why not?
Absolutely.
But they didn't have any more than that one hit in 1969.
Many things will come to pass.
and the smoke shall rise again to the place above where it began. And number 13, Classics 4 and Traces. Goodness.
It's torn in half, memories in bits and pieces, traces of love long ago that didn't...
The four-man soft rock group led by Dennis Yost from Jacksonville that also brought us Spooky and Stormy and lots of other stuff. It was on its way to peaking at number two. So that was it this week. We'll have another good one next week, won't we?
Definitely.
Artists who debuted at number one or number two, Eric Carmen debuted at number two with All By Myself in the winter of 76.
That's right, he did.
You know, my friend George Sipple, who appeared on two episodes at the end of season two, and they're both one of the most downloaded episodes that we have on our archives, which, by the way, you can call up any of the shows wherever you listen, Spotify or Amazon, Pandora, whatever, Tim Friedman's 70s Rock Conversations. If you want a link, just kind of look at 70s Rock Conversations, and the link will come right up.
Yeah.
When I was young, I never needed anyone. And making love was just for fun. Those days are gone. Living alone, I think of all the friends I've known. But when I dial the telephone, nobody's home.
If you ever have any ideas for categories, just feel free to send them along via, you know, Facebook or whatever, right?
Sure.
So Eric Carmen and George Sipple's band, he talked about the band Magic, which Eric kind of used as his backup band. And so George would play keyboards on that. And it spent 3 weeks at number two in March of 1976, did All By Myself, just behind Love Machine, and then December 1963.
Really?
Yes,
I didn't realize
good competition
that.
Back then,
I knew
wasn't
it was a huge hit, but...
Number two.
Got blocked.
Eric Carmen, All By Myself. Number two for 3 weeks in the winter of 76.
Good stuff.
One-hit wonder time, Frankie. Yeah, I've got a good one. Sweet Baby. Stanley Clark and George Duke, you know, the Duke and Clark project from 1981.
Absolutely.
It was number 19 hit. In the early summer of 81, it features the terrific duo. George Duke is a jazz keyboardist from San Francisco. He played with Zappa and Jean-Luc Ponty, Cannonball Adderley. Stanley Clark, a bassist, film composer, and founding member of one of the first jazz fusion bands, Return to Forever.
That's right.
He went on to play bass with Paul McCartney on Tug of War and Pipes of Peace.
Right, and I know that he played bass for Miles Davis at least sometime in his career. Yeah.
I'm sure that in our Best Instrumentals category, Miles Davis will be coming up before too long.
There you go.
So Duke and Clark had that song, Sweet Baby. It's a really, really cool song. You know, they reunited a couple of times in the 90s and the 2000s as well. So this song, Sweet Baby, went to number 19 in the spring of 81. It's been like 20 weeks on the chart, so it was a big hit,
yeah,
spring and summer.
When I think about your loving, the sunny evenings, the fun we used to share, looking through the memories in my mind. Since I've laughed and cried and thought it over, now I realize that it's never over, only set aside. Aren't you, sweet baby? I will never be free from your embrace, sweet baby. Only hoping it's not too late to try again.
Rock releases week of April 25th, getting into spring, you know, kind of like movies. They want some good stuff to listen to in the summer, don't they?
Absolutely.
Doobie Brothers released Stampede on this date in 1975.
Oh, that's a good one.
Remember Tug of War with Ebony and Ivory and Take It Away, Paul McCartney?
Sure.
That was released in 1982.
Probably one of his last really big ones.
Was his big one. I know they had Pipes of Peace and some others, but they didn't sell as much.
No, I think that was kind of that peak of his after Beatles career.
Remember Give My Regards to Broad Street?
Absolutely.
That ill-fated movie of his?
Yeah.
So he was on Johnny Carson promoting it, and he didn't do a lot of those personal appearances, but you kind of could tell he really needed to push this movie, and it never really did much, did it?
No, it didn't take off at all.
I can wait another day until I call you. You've only got my heart on a string and everything a flutter. But another lonely night might take forever. We've only got each other to blame. It's all the same to me, love, 'cause I know what I feel.
Chicago Transit Authority did with their self-titled album in 1969. You like that album, don't you?
Oh, I love that album, and it's gone into the national historical archives
of all time. Yeah. Sly and the Family Stone in 1968 released Dance to the Music.
Oh, another great tune.
Turtles, Happy Together in 1967. Remember Fair Warning by Van Halen, 1981? I remember the album. I know I played it at ACRN College
Radio.
Absolutely,
yeah.
I don't remember any of the tunes from it. Do you?
Yeah, I don't either. But I'm sure, you know, that if you go out and turn on 98.5, you'll hear one.
You'll hear it. Or twice. Moody Blues, On the Threshold of a Dream. I do know that album. That came out in 1969. The Doobie Brothers, 1971, their self-titled debut album. Paul McCartney and Wings, Red Rose Speedway, 1973. And Sailing Shoes by Little Feet came out in 1972. Were you a big fan of Lowell George and Little Feet?
To a point.
Yeah.
They had some good stuff, but I was never, you know, a super fan or had to go see him or anything like that.
Yeah, they are in the same category to me as Jimmy Buffett.
Right.
I liked him, but I don't think I'd ever see him. Jeff Beck released his album Wired in 1976.
That's a very good one, yes.
Featured artist Frankie J. Giles, the American rock band formed in Worcester, Massachusetts in 1967. What do you think?
Fantastic band, fantastic live band. Saw them a couple of times live, and wow.
Wow, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Three live albums, right?
Yes, they did. Yeah.
Still waiting for their call to join the Rock Hall. I know you made a case for them in the Two Should Get In category. They were nominated in 2005 and 6 and 2011 and 17 and most recently in 2018.
Well, how you can have a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and have ABBA in and Jay Giles out beyond the realm of my imagination.
I think that's the question for the ages. Exactly. Even Todd Rundgren mentioned that long ago when he was inducted. So, and he was inducted last October, by the way, sure. Finally. Rock and blues and jazz, great live band. Kind of hard to peg their musical style exactly. Some critics called them too white for black kids and too black for white kids.
Well, you know, there's a certain amount of truth to that. Yes, absolutely.
What does J stand for in Jay Giles?
I thought John.
John Warren Giles.
Okay.
Yeah. Or is it Giles? You would think looking at it, G-E-I-L-S, it would be Jay Giles. Jay Giles, Peter Wolf, the fast-talking former DJ at a Boston radio station.
Oh, he sounds like a DJ,
yeah,
doesn't he? Yeah.
Woofer Groofa, Magic Dick, Richard Solowitz played harmonica.
That's right, yeah.
Seth Justman, keyboards, Danny Klein on bass, and Stephen Blad on drums. They got together while Giles was studying at the Worcester Polytechnic Institute.
Wow.
Sounds a little like Tom Scholz
from
Boston.
Yeah, that's some heavy hitters there, yeah.
He was studying mechanical engineering. Mm-hmm. His father was also an engineer and was a big fan of jazz music. He turned his son on to the trumpet and music by Miles Davis, Benny Goodman, Duke Ellington, Count Basie, some heavy hitters there. Started out playing in an acoustic blues trio called Snoopy and the Sopwith Camels.
I love it.
With future bandmates Danny Klein and Magic Dick on the harmonica, so it kind of led to something, didn't it? They had a little something.
It sure did.
They spent most of 1970 as opening acts for artists like B.B. King, Johnny Winters, and the Allman Brothers.
Yeah, that's right.
Before venturing out on their own.
Yeah, they opened for a lot of people and were notorious for literally blowing the headliner right off the stage.
Boy, I'll bet you they were.
Yeah.
When you saw them, you saw them a couple times.
Yes.
Did anybody open for them?
No, they were the opener both times I saw them.
How long was the show?
And it was, you know, I want to say an hour and 15 minutes because they weren't the headliner.
They weren't the headliner, but
so
they blew the
they
other
So they came out and they just rock and rolled for 75 minutes. Jeez. And then they were done. And poor, one
whoever
case it was Peter Frampton.
Oh, yeah.
Poor Pete came out and had made the mistake of starting his show off with a little acoustic set, and the audience was sky high from the Jay Giles set, and it just didn't work.
Fell flat, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Debut album, 1970. The Morning After, produced by Bill Simchick, in 1971.
That's right.
Then came the live Full House album. It hit number 54 here in the States, so pretty good out of 200. The first of their three live albums, recorded in the Cinderella Ballroom in Detroit. The band always had a love affair with Motor City, didn't they?
They sure did, yeah.
And Cleveland.
It ain't supposed to be sad, though you might feel it that way. It's a song about desperation. Every now and then we do get desperate. This is a song about L-O-V-E, and if you abuse it, you're gonna lose it. And if you lose it, you're gonna abuse it. And if you abuse it, you ain't gonna be able to choose it, cause you ain't gonna have it further on down the line. Things ain't gonna be so fine. You're gonna be sitting there on your little machine, trying to look and keep it clean. You're gonna be playing bingo all night all alone. That's why you're sitting there by the telephone, and you know that she ain't going to call you. So you put on the TV and you're watching Johnny Carson segueing right into the Tomorrow Show, but that don't got to go, so you turn it off, you turn on the radio. The radio don't seem to get the click, so you say, hey man, I can't look at the split. You start to open up a little book and there's something there you got to overlook. You say, baby, you know there's something on my mind. You say, baby, there's something on my mind. I know that you're home and I know you ain't all alone. So you start walking over to a house. You get over to a house, you walk over to a door, you start pounding on the door. You say, open up the door, bitch, it's Wolf of Goofy with the green teeth, let me in.
Recorded two of their three live albums in Motor City. 1973 came Bloodshot number 10, Give It to Me, and Ain't Nothing But a House Party. Those are great songs.
It's probably their most successful until later on in their career.
You know, original copies of that album, Bloodshot number 10, in the U.S., released in red vinyl, not the customary black.
Ooh.
So Simchick again was the producer, along with their next few albums. So, you know, he was busy also with the Eagles at the time.
Definitely.
Ladies Invited, hit number 51 in 1973. It was released late in the year. Nightmares and Other Tales from the Vinyl Jungle, featuring Must Have Got Lost. Boy, these songs are great, aren't they?
What a great tune. And, I mean, just every record seemed to have a couple just classics on it.
Yeah, and you can't just walk into any recording studio and book some time either. You have to have a name and music that goes with that name.
Absolutely.
A good producer helps. They recorded this album, Nightmares, at both the Hit Factory and the record plants in New York City. Then Hotline, 1975, with Loveitis, hit number 36. So they were selling. Their music was selling. And Blow Your Face Out, that one I have. That was one of the first Jay Giles albums that I bought.
Right.
And I still have it.
And that's the favorite... my favorite rap of his, the Reputa the Buta rap before Must Have Got Lost.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about it that I read that his raps were pretty much all improvised on the spot.
No kidding.
But that one became so popular from being on the album that everyone wanted to hear it again. So he had to go back and listen to it on the album so he could do it.
That was a great album. It belongs in anybody's record collection.
Oh, definitely.
Just don't wait for it to be played on classic rock. Get one of your own
sure.
And you'll enjoy it. Monkey Island came out in 1977. That featured I Do. You know, even a song in there was written by Louis Armstrong.
That's right.
And Luther Vandross provided backing vocals on this album. He's just getting started, wasn't he?
Right.
Luther Vandross. Sanctuary with One Last Kiss. I really like that song. Kind of a different...
Another cool song. Yeah.
They played it a lot at the radio station where I was listening down in Athens. Best of album 1979, released on my birthday, June 5th.
There you go.
19. I don't think I asked for it, but that's probably asking for gas money back then.
Exactly.
Right in the middle of a gas shortage or whatever. Love Stinks, 1918. 1980 came in at number 18. Come Back and Love Stinks. I like Come Back. I'm tired of Love Stinks.
Yeah, and they kind of, that was the one that really set up their success.
Yeah.
They finally were starting to get listened to. They were finally starting to get a little bit of airplay for their songs. And, you know, although, you know, Love Stinks has gotten a little bit much over the years, mm-hmm. it really set up what would become the next album.
I don't know if you remember this song or not. Centerfold.
Might have heard it once or twice.
Freeze Frame came out in October 1981, and it had the title cut and Centerfold, Angel in Blue.
Freeze Frame!
Still a big fan of Jake Isles at the time?
Oh, absolutely. I was cheering for them because I knew that they hadn't had the success. And at one point, they were ready to quit. And so I was very excited and very happy. And I remember going out and buying the album and
enjoying it.
And of course, what I thought would happen if they didn't have success happened when they had success.
Yeah, it did. It was only a couple years till Peter Wolf left the band.
Exactly.
You know, he wanted to pursue that solo career. So they had two more. Showtime in 1982. That was their final live album. You ever see bands like Jake Isles at a different venue, not in Northeast Ohio, maybe in Pittsburgh or something?
No, no.
I know you said Michael Stanley, you saw him, you know, in Youngstown or
right,
something like
right.
that, right?
Yeah, that was, I think, in Meadville, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
I believe,
and
yes.
I've seen some cover bands and stuff at the Youngstown Agora back in the day or something.
Sure.
In Athens or Columbus. I think I saw Heart and Firefall down in Huntington. No, it's down in college.
Yeah.
But Detroit, I never ventured there. Red Rocks in Denver, I would have liked to, or I still would. But the album Showtime, their final live album for Jake Isles, recorded in September of 82 at the Pine Knob Theater in Michigan. Pine
Ooh,
Knob.
Again, Michigan.
Michigan.
And that's right outside of Detroit again.
Yes, it is. You're Getting Even While I'm Getting Old was the final studio album in 1984. And the only one recorded without lead singer Peter Wolf. It peaked at number 80 on the charts, so it still did relatively well even after Peter's departure.
Yeah, but I couldn't tell you a single song off of that one, I'm sorry to say.
Me either. They did reunion tours starting in 1999, but Giles did have to file a lawsuit against members of the band because he wanted to tour without him with the name.
Oh.
And he goes, well, guys, it's my name, it's trademarked.
It always comes down to that, doesn't it? Somewhere along the line, it always comes down to a lawsuit and
yep.
some money.
Didn't Mark Farner yep. from Grand Funk have the same thing to say about, you know, trademarks and you can't use the name and you
sure.
have to go to court and it means spending a lot of money, doesn't it?
Absolutely does.
So he got all upset when they wanted to trademark that name in 2012. After that, he quit the band permanently. He said, forget it, I'm done. No
mm-hmm.
more guys. But Jake Isles did pass away, you know, almost 5 years ago, 2017.
It's hard to believe.
He died of natural causes at age 71. But, you know, after the band broke up, you know, they got back together here and there. But Jake Isles went on to pursue a career in auto racing and automobile restoration.
I didn't realize
Isn't that, cool?
that.
So he spent, you know, his royalty money on that. And
sure.
Probably thinking he'd like to do some gigs with the guys or somebody else. I wonder if he ever appeared on stage just, you know, out of the blue and did some, or Peter Wolf for that matter.
And I don't know if he was a singer, how that yeah. would have worked. I'm not sure. You know, the only singer I knew from the band was, of course, Peter Wolf.
Yeah. Great singles, though. You know, Whammer Jammer, Must Have Got Lost, Freeze Frame, Give It To Me.
Oh,
good stuff, huh?
It's good stuff, yeah.
So you said the concert was maybe an hour, hour and a half right in there. That's
exactly.
pretty good for an opening act.
Yeah.
Usually they give them, what, 30 minutes?
Exactly. But, you know, they were a well-known opening act,
yeah.
so they didn't get shoved off the stage too early.
Peter Frampton had to have known. He's going to be our featured artist next week, by the way. Frampton must have known what he's getting into.
Sure.
Because when you book Jake Isles as your opening act, I'm sure it's not just for that one and only show. Might
exactly.
have been.
Exactly.
But he's probably touring with them.
Oh, I'm sure he was, yeah.
I don't know what would possess him to start off with, like, Baby, I Love Your Way, or something like that.
And that's exactly
like that.
What he did.
This
yeah,
is really
Lines
strange.
On My Face.
Oh, Lines on My Face, yeah. An 8-minute looping yeah. song. Yeah, I just, I don't see it. I don't
you know,
understand
they needed
why
something
that.
Like, Money was one of his big ones, or something like that to start off with.
Yeah.
Or at least...
something.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
Do You Feel Like We Do. That song is like 9 minutes
yeah,
long.
That, and that's the, of course, it's usually his encore.
Yeah. Song. You can't start with Show Me the Way.
Right.
Whatever.
Exactly.
Because people still aren't back in their seat yet. But they are, they're ready to rock and roll. They're ready to party, aren't they?
Sure. Especially after they've gotten Jay Giles under their belt.
Oh, that must have been fun to see. And those albums.
It was.
All three of those albums that we mentioned, the live albums, are worth your time or your downloads. And there's a lot of other great stuff on there, too. And
absolutely.
Hopefully they'll get their call to... join the Rock Hall someday.
Yeah, I don't know how they could keep him out much longer.
Yeah, and and Jake Isles already passed away. You
exactly.
know, these guys are getting older.
And yeah, exactly. And before we lose any more of the band members, let's get them in there. I would love to see them just play together, even though Jake Isles isn't there. The rest of them just play together for a few songs one night.
I think Peter Wolf would say, you know, that's fine. Bygones be bygones. I'm sure he wouldn't mind playing with the band
again.
I
hope so.
Yeah. So that's our featured artist this week, Boston's Jake Isles, loved in Detroit and Cleveland and many other cities. Thanks, Frankie, for your input. Always appreciated and great.
Oh, it's been great being here.
Next week is our featured artist, like we said, Peter Frampton. I'm Tim Friedman, 70s Rock Conversations. I'm Tim Friedman for rock expert Frank Ost. We'll see you next time.